guys, and welcome back to Jules on the Hustle. I hope everyone is having a nice start to their week and thriving in this heat wave. This heat is no joke. If you guys want some tips on how to deal with the heat and to stay hydrated, to eat well, and all those life hacks, follow me on Instagram at Jules L. Baba Daily. I provide content that's good for all, you know, all athletes, all people. It's just lifestyle content. So be sure to follow me at Jules L. Baba, at JulesElBaba. Today, joining me on the podcast is one of UK's most promising young tennis players. She is on the course of becoming a top 100 WTA player. She's 23 years old right now, from London, Harriet Dart. She reached a career high of 121 in singles in 2019 and 92 in doubles. In 2018 at Wimbledon, she reached the semifinals of mixed doubles with her partner, Jay Clark. Joining me right now is Harriet Dart. How have you been? How has quarantine been for you? I don't know what the COVID situation is in England, really.
Yeah, I mean, having spoken to Katie Swan, for example, who, well, she's back from the States now, she, you know, her residence is in Wichita, Kansas. It was very drastically different from what we were experiencing. So when we went into lockdown, that meant everything closed apart from pharmacies and supermarket was open, and that was it. And you could have 1 hour of exercise a day outside, and that was it. So we're on full military situation lockdown, yeah, what it felt like anyway. But gradually there's been different stages where we've been able to, you know, for example, they, you know, the situation got a lot better, so they allowed you could exercise and be outside for however long you wanted, just needed to be outside and not in, yeah, you couldn't, for example, you couldn't go and see your friends or something inside a house, but you could meet up with them at like a park eventually. But to start with, we couldn't even organize like to meet at a park or something. But if you bumped into them, then that would be fine. But you'd have to keep your 2 meters distance. Yeah, there was like one way system in supermarkets. Yeah, it was proper, really strict. So it's nice to kind of be out of that phase and, you know, be able to practice and all of that. So that's been really nice.
Yeah, actually,
just, you know what it's like to get the normality, isn't it? Just get the structure back.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. In the United States, we've had like different phases. So right now, like in New York, or at least where I live in Long Island, we're in phase 4. Do you have like numbered phases?
Yeah, but it's different because we also have like different stages within elite sport.
So
for example, our gym at our training venue is open, but no public gym is open.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's a little bit different.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because you're training like at an elite level or elite athletics.
We have elite venues around the country. So for example, the National Tennis Center where I practice is an elite venue. Mm-hmm. So that was able to open earlier than, for example, I think gyms open at the end of this month, but we've been open for a good couple of weeks, so we've had the benefit of that. And like, for example, athletics, they've had a certain thing that's been open, stuff like that. So it's been quite weird, to be honest. But there are tournaments in the UK, which is a great opportunity for everyone, and hoping to not pick up any more niggles, because that's what it feels like. It's been a bit of a bumpy road during this lockdown period.
Right. So that's, I was going to say, so they have what, UTR events in Europe right now. We obviously in the United States, we don't have anything, no ITFs, no WTAs. All we have is the World Team Tennis going on right now. Are the events in Europe, like, can spectators come, or what's the situation?
No, so there's no spectators or anything, but it's all live streamed, so people can watch. And it's been, you know, really fortunate. For example, the event that Jamie Murray hosted for the Back of the Brits for the men, Amazon Prime took all the rights for that, so people could watch live tennis But obviously, yeah, behind, it was all done behind closed doors. You know, they were having regular COVID tests and everything like that. So, so yeah, everything's kind of behind closed doors. Even the British tours, what we call them, these smaller events, they're being played also at Roehampton, because that's actually the first venue that kind of qualified easily to be, because it's big enough. For like a COVID venue, because it's difficult with an amount more than a certain amount of people to make sure that there's not loads and loads of people, and to make sure everyone's using the one-way system, get enough COVID tests, like all of that. So we've got a team event next week, which I'm playing in, which is Jamie Murray's Battle of the Brits, but it's a team event, so it should be quite fun. And
that's I'm very pretty exciting. Sure
Amazon Prime have the rights to that again, and then some of it's the BBC's been taking it as well, which is great, because that's one of our biggest television, like, free broadcast as such. So yeah, no, I think it is nice that everything's slowly going back to normal, but I feel like every country is different, because ours was like one of the worst. So I felt like everyone in Europe were started hitting balls way before me, and I was like, I want to play tennis. Yeah.
You feel like you're a little bit behind, maybe, but it's cool that
you
a
do,
lot
in your mind, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, for
like
sure.
Been practicing 3 more weeks than me.
Yeah, especially like tennis players, we're so type A and uptight, and we feel like we have to constantly practice every second, and it's like totally in your head. But it's kind of cool that a lot of the events that are starting up, whether it's World Team Tennis or the event you're playing, the Battle of the Brits, they're like team events. You kind of get a taste of college tennis. Tennis is obviously such an individual sport. So whenever you can kind of incorporate a team aspect, I think it's very special. And you get to play for, you know, something bigger than yourself. You get to play for, you know, your cut. Well, I guess, so you're competing against the Brits or like as a team or...
Yeah, so there'll be two separate teams.
Oh, two teams,
a mix,
yes,
of men and women. And it'll be a mix of singles, doubles, and mixed doubles. So it's going to be quite fun. It'll be a bit like World Team Tennis, but there'll
very
be
cool
full matches.
Yeah.
There'll be full matches instead of first five. But yeah, I think World Team Tennis, at least they've shown that they can do it safely, right?
Right, exactly. And the thing about World Team Tennis is I think they started with like 500 fans, and then each day they're gradually increasing as long as, you know, the situation doesn't get worse. But yeah, everyone has to come with a mask and everything. So I also wanted to ask you, so Wimbledon, they're giving their prize. Yeah. So I want to know how you feel about Wimbledon dispersing the prize money to, it's all the players that were in the main draw and the qualifying, correct?
Yeah.
What are your views on that? Does that help you? Do you like that?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I think all the players appreciate, you know, any form of support, and especially, you know, the amount that they're actually giving is very significant. So I think I can speak for all the players that they're, you know, pretty chuffed. I guess as well, they've just been quite fortunate because of they had pandemic insurance. So I guess that's kind of differentiates them from the other slams.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the overall consensus was, yeah, very grateful for it. And it just shows to me that Wimbledon is still the best slam.
Yes, no, I mean, that's very generous. And especially a lot of players, you know, were struggling during quarantine, not competing. So this definitely helps bump you up a little bit. You're the third highest ranked British tennis player in the entire world. And you've played on the Fed Cup. You've been in the Fed Cup squad. How does it feel to, you know, maybe represent your country versus playing individually?
Yeah, so last year, I made my debut. I played 2 doubles rubbers in Bath, which, again, was so unusual because we'd never played in the UK for more than a quarter of a century. So that was pretty crazy to kind of be on home soil and have that opportunity. So that was like super exciting for me, and I remember walking on and I was so nervous, and but then I relaxed and it was all good, and it was so great to have the home crowd and the home support. But yeah, I mean, you definitely feel the, you know, it's so much greater than just yourself. You're playing for everyone on the team. So I think that just inspires you to kind of do the best that you can do even more and just leave it all out there. So this year I played my first two singles rubbers, live rubbers in Slovakia away. So again, this was only my second Fed Cup, and it was just quite different because obviously I was only used to Bath, so I had nothing to compare it to. And also playing singles is a little bit different to doing putting for a doubles rubber.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I played on a surface that I wouldn't say I'm very that comfortable on, playing on clay. We're also playing away, so it's very different. So obviously the home crowd for them is going to be amazing. But we were so lucky. We had so many British fans come out for us, which was so nice. And yeah, again, I was super nervous going on. I just wanted to kind of make everyone happy and just win. But then you realize that, again, it's so much bigger than you. And, you know, you just play for your whole team, and then, you know, everyone who's watching or tuning on TV and that, and you just kind of want to make everyone proud and do well. And I think I made a good account of myself, and I was happy with how I was able to, you know, put aside the nervous feelings and all of that, and kind of separate it. And also very tight three set battle with Kuzmova. But yeah, I mean, it was super exciting. I mean, it's so different to playing for yourself. Like, yeah. I can't explain the emotions. Like, when I was coming back in the third set, just the noise and the roar of the British fans, you know, just gets you so pumped up and just want to keep going and do the best that you can do and hopefully get a win. And I mean, at the same time, you know, I was clearly devastated after losing, and I just felt, for me, I felt like I'd let everyone down because I lost.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's just how you feel. You know, it's very different playing an individual sport where if you lose, it's kind of on me, and, you know, I have to deal with my loss with my team, you know. Whereas when you play for a team, you know, we've got so many great support staff, you know, who do the best that they can with us, all the British fans, and then also my Fed Cup teammates. So I really felt like I'd let everyone down for not getting the result.
Yeah, and this is coming from you, who, you know, got to the second round of the Australian Open this year. You won your first round, and then you played, you know, on Rod Laver Arena against Simona Halep. Last year, you played against Maria Sharapova. Like, those are big, you know, settings and atmospheres. Like, how does that pressure kind of compare to the pressure of playing, like, with your team, maybe?
Yeah, I think those experiences definitely helped me in a lot of ways, you know, with the being on a big stage at a big moment. Because again, I mean, all of these are quite new to me still. So yeah, it's, you know, being able to channel, you know, myself, get the best out of myself, however that might be, and being as best prepared as possible. And I think the more, you know, I get into those situations, the more you feel comfortable. You know, it's the small things, like, sounds really silly, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, it's at a tournament when you're familiar with where the changing rooms is.
Yeah.
The time that you go from the changing room to the warm-up area, to then from the warm-up area to the courts, just knowing those little things so that you're stress-free and, you know, just, yeah, a bit more comfortable because you know where everything is, and it's a lot easier because you've been there before.
Absolutely. So one of my favorite things about you, Harriet, is that I feel like you're an open book. You're not afraid to be yourself. I feel like so many girls on tour are, you know, very scared of things getting around, you know, the tour, and they don't want things to spread around the WTA. So that's why I chose you to kind of dive into some of the hard stuff that we have to deal with. Can you first just talk about how you became such, like, an open person? You're not, like, afraid of, you know, like, rumors spreading around. Like, you're just yourself. How did you become like that?
Well, it's a good question. I think I've always been brought up, you know, with my parents and my family, and in a way that you do need to have open and honest and those difficult kind of conversations that you know, might have, whether that's if you're feeling anxious or certain things. And I think I've been really lucky with my parents that they've always been so supportive of me, whatever I do, regardless if I wanted to pursue tennis or say something else. And yeah, I think it's just, again, super important just to kind of surround yourself with the right people. And those are kind of the only people that matter, because I mean, we've all had it where we've had social media trolls.
Oh yeah. We're getting into that. Don't worry.
So, I just think it's, you know, so important to know kind of who your friends are and, what's the word, you know, no one else's opinion really matters. And that's kind of how I go about things. You know, I think a lot of people worry too much about what other people think
and exactly
whatever. And to me, I'm just a bit more like, well, you're not going to please everyone. So you need to do, you know, I think what I say, the basics, you know, like I think it's really important as a human being to be super polite, kind. You know, I'd say that a lot of those attributes, you know, help me with a lot of things, because I think people on tour especially get scared about opening up, don't they, because they feel like it's a sign of weakness. And I think that's also related to tennis in general, because obviously we've been taught so much to kind of show no emotion, don't show anything to your opponent. So I think that's why a lot of people might also feel it more difficult to open up because of those things.
I completely agree with you. And another hard thing is, you know, when you're on the road 3-4 weeks, we're human. Like, it's really hard to contain everything every day. Like, I just like would sometimes find myself, you know, on the practice court or at dinner that night, kind of just like opening up a little bit. Like, it's not human to just keep everything close. Like, of course you can call people at home and talk to them over the phone, like people you trust, but sometimes I just like find myself talking to like the other girls, and it's like, who can you trust, who can you not trust? But it's like, it's all year long tennis. There's no like season where, you know, 6 months you're competing and then 6 months you're at home with your friends and family. So it's only human to feel like sometimes you want to open up, but some girls literally don't open up, which is hard. How would you say your? Oh, sorry. Continue. What were you gonna say?
No, please. Go for it.
Oh, I was gonna say, how would you say your friendships are with the other Brits, and like, are you guys able to cheer each other on? I know in tennis it's a very difficult line. It's like you want to like be better than everyone else, but I don't know. I was wondering how your relationship is with them.
I think it's always tricky because in tennis, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to be playing against these people. So, obviously, you're not going to be as close with some people as others, just in general life. You know, everyone doesn't get on with everyone. That's just the way it is. And I think with tennis, I think people have this false conception that everyone has to get on with everyone, mm-hmm. which you don't. You just, you know, you wouldn't necessarily, you know, pick certain people to be your friends unless maybe you were in that environment. So for me, it's more, you know, I've got some close friends, and yeah, amongst the Brits, we are relatively close, and that's nice because a lot of us practice together a lot as well. But I mean, I also think it's about picking and choosing what you tell each other, isn't it? And
definitely.
And certain things, some things are very deep, and you maybe only speak to certain people about that. So, but yeah, I can totally, you know, see from your end that, you know, at tournaments, sometimes you just need to let it out, and it needs to be in someone. And, you know, some people they're a bit more cagey as such, aren't they?
At night, like at a tournament, would you opt to like hang out with like a friend at dinner? Or do you kind of do your own thing with your coach when you go grab a meal? I know everyone's a little bit different.
So for me, I usually do a lot of that before or after the tournament.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I'm friendly with like loads and loads of people. So it's usually, depending on the tournament, can be like one or two that I'm really close with that I go for dinner with or something. But as soon as the tournament starts, I'm pretty, I'm pretty, what's the word? Do the same thing. You know, whether that's with my coach or my team, or for example in Australia, you know, one night I don't want to see anyone, I just sit in my apartment and I get some food and bring it back and eat it.
So you stay in like a bubble kind of thing?
Yeah, I stay in my own bubble, but at the same time I'll go out for dinner with my coach and my trainer or something like that. But sometimes also I think it's important to have your own space, so I'm very happy in my own company to watch like a bit of Netflix series and eat my dinner.
You mentioned before social media trolls, so we're gonna go into that. Unfortunately, there are people that bet on our matches, on girls tennis. Come on, like, the girls tennis is so like unpredictable, and these people get joy in betting on us for some reason. Have you had to deal with a lot of that? How has it impacted you?
This is a heavy topic. Yeah.
I apologize.
No, it's good. So yeah, I mean, any professional athlete, I think, has experienced some form of social media trolling, whether that's by direct message or trolling your feed and start commenting on photos. Yeah, I've definitely had my fair share. I sometimes find it quite amusing. Other times can be more difficult, I feel like. But then again, I think you always have to remember who, you know, does this person really matter to you? Does their opinion matter to you? Would this person be saying this to you if they were face-to-face? They're just keyboard warriors. And I think that's what I always bring myself back to, the fact that these people have nothing better to do with their lives than troll me. So that's how I look at things. And I think at the start, when I started receiving these messages, I was quite shocked, because obviously I had never experienced anything like this before. But then I think you just learn to kind of cope with it, and a lot of the time it just goes to filtered messages, or, you know, on your comments on your photos or something. But yeah, I think again it just takes you back to kind of your grounding and going, okay, well, you know, the only people that matter to me are their opinion,
right?
People on social media, or, you know, the people who are trolling me. I think that's just really important to remember that, as much as they can be super hurtful. I think as well, if some of them are really extreme, it's important to just report it, because obviously they should not be allowed to be writing some of the things they're writing. But I don't know whether that's for Instagram or Facebook to kind of block those crude messages.
Yeah. It got to the point,
because even if you report them, they end up just getting a new account. So it's right. Quite difficult to kind of monitor it all.
Yeah, like Instagram, they're kind of like bots. Like, they just make these accounts to troll the players. It actually got to the point for me where, like, not only would these people like attack me, they would like attack the family, and they find your friends, and it's just very frustrating. It got to the point where I gave my mom my Facebook password, and I asked her, like, can you delete the messages during like my matches, or like whenever you see a message, can you, like, I don't want to see it. And like, she didn't care if she saw them, but it just, for me, just made me so mad. And a lot of, you know, you just, like you said, you only have to worry about the opinions of people that matter, not the opinions of frogs. But yeah. It's still like, you
can
know,
be very difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. You pour your heart out on the court, and it's like, a lot of times it is funny, and it's interesting how you see players sometimes like posting it on their social media, like screenshotting it and be like, okay, like, I see you, like, it's so dumb, these people. Have you gotten some pretty bad ones, would you say?
Yeah, pretty bad. And again, attacking my family.
Yeah.
I had one really bad one, basically insinuated that they knew where I lived. And oh, really, that's... freaked me out a bit.
That's not okay.
But other than that, everything's been just general crude comments and, you know, telling me how bad I am, which, after a match when you lose, you already think that. So
yeah.
It's really helpful when they say that again.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I get to the point where I'm like, I suck. Like, I don't really give a crap if they think I suck too. Like, I already know it. Like, I lost. I'm so mad. But yeah, when they say they know where you live, you're like, okay, that's a line that has to be drawn.
You know, you pour your heart and soul into a match. You give everything. And then you know, you get all these awful, awful comments. Which, yeah, it can be incredibly difficult to deal with. And like I said, you're already down in the dumps after losing a match anyway. Especially, you know, when it's like 7-6 in the third, 7-5 in the third, and you've been out there for 3.5 hours, and then all these messages pop up. Great. Thanks, mate. I really appreciate you telling me how bad I am after I already feel this bad. But thank you. Thank you for your worthy comments.
Yeah, they're just...
They don't even get creative. That's what I find amusing.
You said they get creative or they don't get creative?
No, they don't. They don't. It's always the same thing. It's like, something, you loser. How do you get broken serve at so-so? And it's the same thing, and it's always the same people as well. You know?
Yeah, they're like 15 double faults. You don't know how to serve. I'm like, there's a pressure out there.
I think what's more funny is that I still get them even when I win. So regardless of result, a lot of the time is...
So those are people that bet against you that they thought you would lose, then you win. So it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So one more topic I wanted to get into before we play a little game. I want to talk about...
I'm nervous.
No, nothing to be nervous about. It's kind of like, we don't have to make it personal, but I want to ask you about, you know, we're on the road so much. Like, are you able to, you know, handle like dating? I don't know what your situation is, if you're dating anyone. Like, it's hard. Like, it feels like to have a relationship when you're constantly traveling. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely with its challenges. I've been with my boyfriend now, just gone 2 years.
Oh, there you go. I didn't realize you had a boyfriend, so that's awesome.
Yeah. I try and keep it off. I share what I want to share on social media. I'm not about showing everything.
100%
and
agreement.
That to me is like keeping my private life a little bit more separate. It is nice. It's nice to have somebody, and that's a kind of support network. We actually live together too, so that's nice. So when I am home, I see him a lot more, and also during this time I've seen him a lot, which has been really weird, obviously, because normally I'm back and to or from tournaments here for a couple of days. I'll see you in 6 weeks. It's nice, he has his own life and his own job and all that, and you know, he'll sometimes come to a couple of tournaments, but generally not many. But I think, you know, we have a strong relationship, and that's great, and we're able to keep it going during traveling and all that, which, like I said, just comes with its challenges, especially with time differences and stuff.
I am glad to hear that you guys make it work and you guys are able to keep such a strong relationship. Do you sometimes feel like maybe guilty being on the road for many weeks at a time? You feel like, oh, I'm not there? Because that's something I've struggled with, and I know a lot of girls struggle with as well.
Yeah, I sometimes do feel that, and not just from, you know, my boyfriend's point of view, but also my family, because I feel like, you miss out on a few things, whether that's birthdays or... you know, going for dinner or certain things that you do as a family with other people too. So yeah, sometimes, and I definitely don't get to spend enough time with my grandparents as well, which obviously during this time as well has been very difficult. But as much as I can, I, you know, try and see them as much as possible whenever I am back in the UK. Just remembering that, you know, everyone, as much as I'm getting older, everyone else is getting older too. So just being able to spend as much as possible with the close people around me, whether that's close family or friends.
Yeah, that's a real thing, you know. You try not to think about it, but it's like, you're right, everyone's getting older, and you, deep down, you feel bad. You're like you don't want to think that way, but, you know, like, you know, no one's getting younger, like, God forbid, like, I don't get to see this person again. Like, it's a horrible feeling. Tennis players have so much, like, anxiety, stress, and pressure. I think a lot of it is because it's an individual sport. We think about these things more and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So,
totally.
So one last game here, or one game, we're going to call it. So the podcast is called Jules on the Hustle. You're the first person to play this game. This game is called Harriet's Hustle. You ready for it? So I want you to tell me the first thing, first word, whatever, that you think of when I say this. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite city?
London.
Favorite activity to relax on the road?
Netflix.
Favorite pregame meal and or snack?
Chicken and rice.
Early match or late match?
Late match.
Ooh, I like early match. What if it's so hot? Still late match?
A late match is good, because you have I had a 7 p.m. start in Melbourne, so.
What about, 12 noon or, 9 a.m.? Like, if it's really hot.
Oh, 9 a.m. I'd take a 9 a.m. for sure.
Meditate or journal?
Meditate.
Drink extra coffee or take a nap? If you're tired. What are you greedy about?
Nothing.
Who's someone you are envious of?
Ooh.
This one's hard. Or you want to be like?
Who do I want to be like? Oh, that's really tough.
That is a tough one.
It's not really a quick fire, this one.
Yeah, this one's not.
Who would I want to
Maybe
be
someone
like?
On Instagram that you admire.
I mean, I admire my mum.
You're okay. But you're not envious of her, obviously. You admire her.
No,
that's a good answer.
I don't really know. I feel like I don't think like that.
Yeah.
Well,
that means you're fulfilled with your life and what you do. Means if you're not envious of someone, it means that you're happy with where you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So your mom. Lastly, if you weren't a tennis player, what would you be doing? I know you're very into your academics and school. I read that you went to a prestigious school.
Yeah. I was in the last few years, I was studying forensic psychology as a degree, but I haven't actually finished it, purely from just travel can take its toll, and when you rest, you want to rest. So I'd probably do something within forensic psychology field. Basically, the people on CSI, I would be in the lab. That would be me.
It's a good one.
I would be Abby. I think it's Abby on NCIS.
I know nothing about NCIS, but we'll go with that. Abby from NCIS. Harry, anything else you'd like to dish out about your life or about the topics we discussed? Any advice you'd like to give my listeners?
It's a good one. I think that anyone can do anything that they put their mind to, and that no one should ever tell you that it's impossible, because it's not.
So the biggest reason I wanted to have Harriet Dart on the podcast with me is because I know how open she is and honest about her thoughts and feelings. She's kind of like one of those players on tour that will tell you things as it is, won't sugarcoat or anything. And she's not afraid to kind of express what's going on. I wanted to open up with her about some of the hardest parts of the sport, such as the social media aspect, the social media trolls, how girls can get catty on tour, how the fakeness is so real, living out of a suitcase all year long, how to determine whether someone's a real friend or you kind of have to, keep yourself at distance. She's one of those players that will tell you how she actually feels and not afraid of rumors or things getting around the WTA. So that's why I kind of wanted to peel the layers of the onion and get right to the core and just really dive into some of these topics that most people wouldn't want to discuss. I hope this podcast gave you some good insight about what it's like, really. You know, you guys see the nice parts. I always talk about this. I feel like a broken record, but it's so important to reiterate like how real this is, that you guys see the luxurious part of the sport. You don't see like the stuff that the girls have to deal with all the time. And I hope you guys enjoyed that game I played at the end. I think it's like a fun way to get to know the person I'm interviewing. But Harriet's hustle was interesting. As always, guys, subscribe to this podcast so you know when I post the next episode. Rate and comment this podcast or leave a review. Would appreciate them all. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jules L Baba, at JulesElBaba. If you have any questions or comments, email me at JulesOnTheHustlePodcast@gmail.com. If you either want to be on the podcast with me or have any ideas of what content to cover. But anyways, guys, have a wonderful week. Stay safe in this heat and see you guys next time on Nowhere Else But Jules on the Hustle. Bye-bye.